time for This Week in Chicago History now with Anna DeVlantis. And first, we go back to Monday Night Football this week in 1995 and a very historic catch, but it wasn't made by a player, was it, Anna?
No, it was in the stands. Good morning, Bob. This is something Bears fans, longtime Bears fans, will remember really well. It was Monday Night Football, as you say, under the lights. And this Chicago Bears fan just did something so incredible that kids should never try at home, but was celebrated across the city at the time. This fan, as you may recall, Bob, was seated high above the tunnel in the end zone. And when the extra point was kicked, this fan leapt like Superman style into the air. He caught this ball with perfect timing, and then he made it, like, jumped like 15 feet to the ground right in front of the tunnel and with this perfect landing. He just nailed the landing, and everybody just cheered. They're like, wow, who is this guy, and how is he able to pull this off? I mean, the ball had barely made it off the toe of Kevin Butler when this guy just came out of nowhere. No one expected it. It just sort of happened. And there was this roaring applause and such a big deal. And because it was under the Monday Night Football lights, he became an instant celebrity. Michael Pantazis is his name, a proud Sullivan High School grad, played football. Won't surprise you. The announcers pulled him from the crowd and then later in the game. And they're like, what were you doing there? What got into you? And here's an interview.
Now we got the guy. What's your name?
Michael Pantazis. I'm from the north side of Chicago. I played football at Sullivan High School.
Well, Mike, you could have gotten yourself hurt jumping down like that.
I played defense, offense. I got great hands. I played football my whole life. I love it, baby.
You got a little Monday Night Football history, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's Lynn Swann interviewing him.
Just incredible to think about that. He was a hero, Bob, for a little while. Also was on David Letterman. I think we have a little clip of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mike Pantazis. Mike, come on up. Here we go. What were you thinking just the second before? Describe for us that decision-making process.
Yeah, I forgot that he became a national sensation, didn't he?
Right. Such a cool thing. You know, Bears fans were joking that the Bears should sign him. You know, some said that Ditka should use that as a training, you know, thing that they do to train the team. And it just, you know, he just had hero status. It's pretty incredible what he pulled off.
And he did have a party to celebrate, was it the 20-year anniversary of the catch?
Yeah. 20 years later, he had this huge party at the Abbey Bar where everybody got together and just sort of remembered him. There was a documentary about him. This guy, like, you know, he had his whatever minutes of fame you call it, but you're just loving every minute. Such like an easygoing, just, you know, lovable Bears fan kind of guy, too.
Great story. Cool. Yeah. Now we have some amusement park history to talk about, don't we?
And anyone remember The Edge? Did you ever ride The Edge?
Never did. No, I'm not a roller coaster guy, though.
Yeah, this one was not one for people who are not roller coaster guys either, because it was, you know, this thrilling ride where you would go straight up, leg dangling into this tower, 130 feet up, and then it would drop you. That's why it was called The Edge. But something happened this week back in 84. They dismantled the ride because in the 82-83 season, it was like this most promoted thing. Everybody was talking about it. It was in all the commercials. But three downstate teenagers got stuck on the edge, and it stopped, and people were sort of like, what's going on? And then part of the mechanism actually failed. Wasn't a total safety failure, but part of it did fail, and they kind of free fell down, back down. Still attached, but part of the support system had failed. So the teens went to the hospital. And Bob, the interesting part of this is there were a lot of rumors. People said that the teens had passed away. They were critically injured. Would they survive? When really they only suffered minor injuries. I'm sure they were very shocked and it shouldn't happen. But, it was a minor thing that the reputational damage eventually just did it in. Even after multiple safety reviews from federal and local safety inspectors, didn't matter. And the ride was operating in other states without any problems, but no one trusted it. No one wanted to ride it. The lines went away. And so this week they dismantled the Edge in 1984.
And that's why I'm not a roller coaster guy.
Right.
Let's talk about some Cubs history and a game in Milwaukee, but it was not against the Brewers, was it?
No, but against the Astros. Interesting case here. So last week, Bob, we talked about Milt Pappas, the no-hitter in 1972. Cubs fans would have to wait 36 years to see another one by a Cubs pitcher, Carlos Zambrano, September 14, 2008, against the Astros. He no-hit the Astros. It's in the history books, though, as for the reason you suggest, because it's the only no-hitter by a single pitcher on a neutral site. Hmm. Hurricane Ike had just, like, devastated Houston. The power was out everywhere. The city was really in, had a lot of troubles and chaos. And Major League Baseball decided, let's hold the series in Milwaukee. Well, Milwaukee's pretty close to Chicago, so it kind of became a home game for the Cubs. And what a treat for those fans who actually could make it. 23,000 fans in attendance at Miller Park. The Astros were coming into that game, winning 14 of the past 15 games until Zambrano shut them down. We pulled the call.
3-2 with two outs. Here's a pitch. Swing and a miss! A no-hitter! Carlos Zambrano has no-hit the Houston Astros! Oh, baby! The first no-hitter for the Cubs since Mel Pappas in 1972.
Len Casper with the call. We go back to 1994, This Week in Chicago History, and the Stones in Chicago. Anna?
Such a cool thing to remember, and such a cool moment, too, for a local Chicago musician. This week, 1994, Bob, the Rolling Stones rolled into town, Soldier Field, and a local musician's childhood dreams came true at that moment. The Stones were touring and promoting their Voodoo Lounge album. Longtime bassist Bill Wyman had just left the band not long before that, and so they tapped Chicago musician Daryl Jones to step into his place. Southside native, attended Chicago Public Schools, Chicago Vocational High School, who said he got involved playing the bass through a school talent show, actually. He saw guys on stage playing it, and he said, I want to do that. And he has said he back then even he had the dream that he always wanted to play on stage with the greats. Almost didn't matter who they were, but he wanted to be there with some of the greatest performers of all time. That was his childhood dream, his goal. And he got his wish. Here's a clip of Daryl Jones, an interview he did with the WGN-TV morning show a few years back. He had already been playing with the Stones for many years.
I was lucky because of the music scene in Chicago is so diverse.
Yes. Mm.
And the elder musicians really do, they don't let you get away with a lot here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a really great education both at CBS and in the music scene here in Chicago.
Was there any hesitation in terms of joining the Rolling Stones, guys who have known each other since they were children?
Well, there was a little bit of trepidation.
Yeah, trepidation, I had
a good friend who was playing one of their albums a lot and telling me, I think this is great. And I was like, it's okay, you know. But the more I listened to it, the more I thought, you know, the way I play could work with them, you know. And so, and then also I had the great pleasure and honor of playing with Miles Davis.
Yes.
As my first really big gig.
Yes.
So after that, you kind of, you know.
You hit the top, the pinnacle. Yeah.
Because the Stones look up to Miles Davis, right?
No, I did hear that. I heard that Keith asked when I came in to audition, well, who has he played with? And somebody told him, we played with Miles Davis. And Keith apparently said, oh, I guess we should have a
listen.
Talk
to him. Yeah.
And he went on to work with the Stones quite a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, decades. Actually, longer than Bill Wyman, who he replaced. But he, you know, it's funny, he always said he had he has a good sense of humor about him. And he said that, you know, even though I play with the Stones, I'm not a full-fledged Rolling Stone. He said, I play with them, but my accountant assures me I'm definitely not in the Rolling Stone.
Daryl Jones is quite a story. And finally, we have some Chicago snack history, don't we?
So much of this, Bob, and so celebrated. Vintners. Do you ever like the Vintners potato chips?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I remember they always had some unusual flavors, like dill pickle and some other. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to try that. But they're a Chicago, just a Chicago thing. They were launched here and have been available here ever since. I'm not sure they're available many places across the country anymore, but they're still available here. The company that started it was kind of an accident or an act of hope, you could say, to save a business during the Great Depression. C.J. Vintner ran a general store on South Ashland, the city's south side. He was selling candy and cigarettes, magazines, ice creams, that kind of stuff, to-go items. And then the Depression hit, and business was horrible. And Mr. Vintner noticed that the only businesses doing well around him were the taverns. So he said, you know what, I'm going to try to make a salty snack. I'm going to sell it out of my store, and then I'm going to throw it into these gallon drums and start going tavern to tavern after hours and try to sell them, to sell my popcorn, you know. So we invested in this big popcorn maker, and that launched the business. Then moved into pretzels and potato chips. He still supplied the taverns. He had truck routes across the city. Eventually opened a larger facility on South Kedzie and started marketing nationwide. Became one of the largest distributors of popcorn ever across the country. And the potato chip business did really well. Again, they had these unusual flavors, too. I think they still have this tangy triple cheese, which they say is the next best thing to eating a deep dish Chicago pizza. So it's, you know, they had their thing and they ran with it. And look at them now. So it's been bought and sold. It is no longer Chicago owned, but still an incredible story.
Launched here in September 1930. I need to get them to make their chip a little thicker, though. Otherwise,
yeah, it is a good. Little thin one, right?
This week in Chicago history. Talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you, Anna.
All right. Talk to you then. Bye, Bob.